This is an interesting one, which is what are the biggest misconceptions you see these folks have about doing business in Canada?
Okay, let me take that back to maybe banking. So often the assumption is that when you say you're going into the bank, your business is separate from your personal. So your personal banking and, you know, business banking, two separate things. Yes, two separate accounts. However, when it comes to lending, it is probably, I would say this is about like general for almost all of the banks. Any lending that you do under 100,000 is often based on your.
Welcome back to the Newcomers Podcast, people, where I explore what it means to be an immigrant, immigrants like myself. Today, I'm talking to Buntu Galata, who, I've met her in a couple of really interesting places. She's advised me, too, about the newcomers and the way and how to approach things. But she's, so to kind of explain who she is, she runs entrepreneurship strategy for ATB Financial. But I think what I find interesting about her work is how the intersection between what she does and how immigrant entrepreneurs can find themselves and make lives much better in Canada. She also runs a business called Sayu Consulting, social business consulting, helping folks who are looking to work with the rural African communities through engaging the diaspora. That's a ton of stuff. But today's conversation is not exactly about her immigrant journey. I wanted to have that conversation, but maybe someday. Today is really about, like, if you're an entrepreneur in Canada, the newcomer looking to start a business, I mean, we'll explore all that today. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. This is so fun. I finally get to be on the podcast, so thanks.
Yeah, I know we've talked a ton of things. And for me, it was just like, yeah, I had to get you on the podcast to come share all that knowledge you just kind of dropped. I went to one of these. You're like, oh yeah, you could do it this way, do it that way, and I'm like, oh yeah, let's just come talk about it on here and have it recorded. At least other people can learn from it. I think, and I'll start off with this. You're 2 years in this role, which means that you've probably worked with a ton of, you've seen a lot of entrepreneurs and entrepreneur supporting organizations across Calgary, Alberta, and the rest. Mm-hmm. What's the biggest culture shock you think newcomers kind of see when they come here and they say, I want to start a business? Like, what is that culture shock that they go through a lot?
Yeah, for sure. And I think maybe before I answer that, I just want to give some context to my role at ATB. So I'm the Entrepreneur Ecosystem Strategist is my full title. And what I do is, my role has changed over the past, I would say, like 2.5 years or so. But it is currently it's working with organizations that support entrepreneurs and building relationships for them. So our business advisors who are doing our lending and account openings for our entrepreneurs or small business owners. To be able to have those relationships. And then the second part of my role is doing a lot of our educational content. So we host a lot of workshops. Sometimes we host it at our entrepreneur center. I'm based in Calgary. And in my portfolio, I have Calgary and Southern Alberta. And I've got two other colleagues that are based in Edmonton and Northern Alberta as well. And it is really to be able to provide that educational piece for a lot of our entrepreneurs who are new to entrepreneurship, but also maybe new to Canada and, you know, newcomers would be in that space because sometimes it's business is not run, often actually it's not run the same way as if they were, you know, running a business at home in their home countries, it may not be run the same way. So there's a lot of just processes and checklists that they have to go through. So it's educating on those pieces. And then also just around cash flow, because often, obviously, we're a financial institution. So the first thing that, entrepreneurs come in to ask is usually, you know, can I get lending and can I get... So that way they can get their businesses up and running and often very difficult to do. So, you know, those are the things that I kind of try to educate on and provide information on. Now, going back to your question as to the culture shock, it really is the process. Sometimes, you know, in home countries, you already have the relationships and you know, when it's home, it's a lot more easier when you grow up there to be able to, you know, figure out maybe what the need is in that community. And then to be able to easily sell the product or service that you provide. But then you come to, you know, Canada, anywhere in Canada, really. And as much as I would say, like, we're multicultural for the most part, but then, you know, your clientele or depending on who it is that you're looking to serve, it may be a bit challenging to find. So if you're bringing in, you know, maybe food from your home country, or if you're making it at home, you kind of have to find and do a bit more, you know, market research to see where do those people shop and find local markets that you can potentially have your product or service provided to or advertise that actually. And so, yeah, I would say that's the main thing is like, will your product be aligned with the need that is within the market. So I think that's kind of one of the things that I think we see is this that alignment of great idea. It may have worked in your home country, but is there a need or a demand for it here? And you kind of have to do a little bit of work to be able to find that out.
Did you wonder if it's a function of we kind of go for what we understand. And so, because there's people who say, let's stay on the food example. Sure. I want to try and sell food. And so I try to sell food and I'm selling to my people, you know? And so we kind of go with that, but then the marketing itself is broader than just your people. And so it's kind of teaching people that you could actually do much more than just selling jollof rice, for example, to people who know who Dozier is, you know?
For sure. For sure. Exactly. And that's the thing. And it's, you know, for people that don't know jollof rice, like where would they try it if they, if say, for example, if you're not at like a farmer's market, for example, and you know what I mean? You go there and this is maybe like a brand new client base for you, but at least they're sampling what it is. So that way they can, you know, either choose to purchase or tell other friends or, you know what I mean? Like you have to figure out how to advertise it for those people that that don't know what your product is. And often also something to, you know, especially again, when it comes to food, you know, I think I may not know the full process on how you get your licensing and everything in place, but you also have to make sure that you've got the right license and registration in place before you start selling food. Yeah. Because the minute that, you know, maybe somebody gets sick or something, like you're going to be ruined. So, you know, you just, you know, there's a lot of processes that, that again, they're not difficult, but they just take time to just, you know, to get in order. But food handling is probably one certificate that you would want to have, regardless of you making the food at home or, you know, getting a commercial kitchen. So things like that may be at home, you know, people may not care as much or there's not a whole lot of regulation around here. It is very important to have that in place. And that's really to just cover your bases if somebody decides to sue you. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing I hear you say here is that it's just that the ability to understand that you're in a different environment and adjust for it. Like, you know.
For sure.
Yeah. It feels like it's a good way to kind of segue to the next question, which is that aside from the culture shock and like, what's the most common mistake you see that people make? Is it just assuming that they can do as they like to some extent and find a way around it? Like, or what's that mistake?
Yeah, Yeah, I would say for sure. I think it's this kind of assuming that everything is just business as usual. You know, if there are certain restrictions in the industry that they're in, like they do need to do a bit of not a bit, like actually like full on research and the work that that they're doing or the business that they want to be able to run. And the other thing too is, to be honest, I find that with a lot of entrepreneurs, and it doesn't matter what industry that they're working in, I think it would actually be really beneficial for them to go and work in that field, even if it's for a year, even if it's, you know, for a very short period of time, going and working in that field and finding out some of the gaps that exist, realizing, okay, what's maybe there that they didn't have at home. Sorry. Or, you know, just like to better understand the environment here and the industry here, so that way they are going to be better off with their business. Because really, like I think a lot of times, if you're doing exactly what your competitors are doing, there's not a whole lot of differentiating. There's not a whole lot that's going to be differentiating your business. So if you have the ability to work in that industry, gain some expertise, and then from that, or maybe provide your expertise as well, right? Because I think often we assume that, you know, we're way advanced and we're not. Like, I mean, I think I remember we briefly, actually, my family and I were in Kenya for a very short period of time, but they were, or and this would have been like almost what, 20 years ago, and they were already sending money via text, right? Like, this is not something that in, you know, in this day and age that we are doing right now. Like, we just got email transfer like a few years ago. So, you know, some things, you know, other countries are way beyond where we're at. But you can bring in that expertise as well, because if that's the background or expertise that you've got and you're bringing here, you can bring that here. But really good to be able to just work in the industry, assess it, and again, just think of it as like market research. You know, if that's not what you, if working is not what you want to do in the industry, just think of it as market research, and you'll be better off for
That is really good advice, honestly, because I feel like it's not talked about enough. You
Nah.
have an idea, you want to work somewhere, just go work there for a bit, like go learn. And I like that you call it market research. Like, just go learn, like, don't jump in. Because I was talking to a friend yesterday about that there are a ton of immigrants who are working, but they don't work, they want to start a business. Because especially when you come here at a certain age, you kind of feel like you don't have time and you want to just, you know, start a business and find my time because you're raising kids and stuff. But yeah, like that's a reason to go work is, okay, if you know what you want to do, then go find a job in that industry and spend some time knowing what needs to be done.
Exactly. And I think it's just a good way of a like building relationships. I think it's, you know, your network is going to be very important, especially if you're coming here from a new country and you haven't built a you know, like a decent network. It's a really good way to be able to do that. And then the second part is really you're getting into this space where you want to be able to run a business in. So what's, you know what I mean? Like, I think the best way to go about that is to go in and do the primary research yourself and say, you know what, this is the gap that I need to fill. And then, you know, I mean, if again, it's not always easy, but sometimes maybe you can work, you know, part-time and you can do your business full-time, but that might not always be available. So just know that you're going to be doing this work for, you know, put a timeline on it. You know, this is again, like you're just there for research, and be doing that and learning from your co-workers, employees, whatever it may be. You know, it'll just be beneficial for you as well.
Yeah. You know, I always think of this thing, which is like finding a job. I mean, I know it's hard, but I think it's it's not on the level compared to what it's like trying to start a business in Canada as a newcomer to Canada. And you've kind of mentioned one thing, which is that we shouldn't forget that we also have value to bring to the society. Because I feel like as newcomers, sometimes we, the example you gave about the transfers in Kenya. But I think is what do you think is the thing you one immigrants discover when they start out this thing? Like when if you think about the folks you've talked to, mm-hmm. or the folks you and your partner organizations have helped to kind of find their way when they're starting a business. What's the one thing or what are those big skills that folks discover when they set out to do that, that others who are thinking of it and who are saying, I'm not sure I want to do this because I think I'll fail, can look forward to? Because I think we need more people building stuff in Canada. So that's why I'm asking that.
For sure, for sure. And honestly, like, I think it comes down to like, you know, at the end of the day, like, I think especially right now, the economy is not great, right? Like, I think that's something that all of us are very aware of. And finding just basic employment, let alone in the industry that you want to work in, is a bit of a challenge. And, you know, for a lot of folks that are, you know, coming here as like, you know, they've got the education, they've got the expertise, they've worked in, you know, their field for many years, and then they have to come here and sometimes they are having to start from scratch. So that, you know, takes a bit of I'm sure it doesn't feel good. And a lot of people I think can relate to that. So then they actually end up downplaying their skills, right? So then now they're like, they're not, I think the bit of confidence that is left starts to slowly just evaporate and, you know, yeah, they try to conform to what society around them wants them to act as or be as. And, you know, that's not accurate. Like, you kind of, you know what you're good at, you know what your skills are, but you just have to be a bit more creative and where, you know, those skills would be valued. And again, yeah, I'm not saying this is easy, because sometimes you just need a survival job to get to point, you know, from point A to point B, and put a roof on top of your head and actually pay, you know, your bills, because nothing is free in this country, as I'm sure as you know, right? So, and often if you don't have, you know, family support, because you've just come here by yourself, or you have kind of your immediate family, don't have kind of that village around you, then it is very difficult, because you kind of have to self-sustain your family, and then also try to run a business, which might be new, and maybe hard if you don't have that network piece that I talked about earlier. So I think, yeah, like, I think it's, again, I don't know, like, I wish it was easy. But I understand that it is not. But really, if you've got a skill that is going to be like a value add, don't give up on it. And honestly, like, I really do think that especially Calgary is such an awesome place for people to just reach out to folks on LinkedIn, or if you know someone that knows somebody else, to say, hey, can you connect me with this individual? And people will sit down and have, you know, worst case scenario, it's like maybe like a 15-minute rushed coffee chat, but people are actually like really willing to do that. So I think, yeah, get out and get to meet people, go to, you know, some of the like industry mixers and, depending, I mean, if you're in tech, especially, I think just go hang out at Platform Calgary, Innovate Calgary, and in any of those places, and you will definitely run into people that are aligned with the work that you're doing or the business that you want to be able to run, and you'll be able to find, hopefully, mentors within that industry as well. So, yeah, I would say, like, don't be shy and ask questions. I think asking questions is very important, but play on your skill, know what you're good at, and pursue it from that angle. Sorry, I think that was a very long-winded answer to a very short question, but...
So self-belief, like, I think what I hear you say is like, man, self-belief is everything, because Canada beats you down in interesting ways when you come here to, I mean, it's an amazing country, but I would say the integration process for new immigrants is kind of wild. And so it beats you down. But so what I hear you say is don't give up on yourself at all.
For sure. Exactly. Because people only know what you present, right? Like people, unless if you are, you know, like, unless you say the things that you're an expert in, or you know, you speak about your vision, and that's actually one thing that I did want to mention around even your business idea. You might think that, you know what, you're the only one that has come up with this idea, and you try to just hold on to it to yourself. In certain industries, yes, I mean, I think you have to. But if you're just thinking about just general business ideas, honestly, get the feedback. So speak your mind, speak your vision into, you know, the kind of the universe, because the ways that things align when you put it out is just incredible. So you have to, you know, speak to even potential competitors. Like if you know of a business that is doing something similar, go have a conversation. The worst thing they can say is, nope, sorry, can't give you that information. And then you move on to something else, but really have the confidence in you and get to know you. And yeah, everyone has self-worth that needs to be respected. And yeah, and you have to have that for yourself as well.
Yeah. This is an interesting one, which is what are the biggest misconceptions you see these folks have about doing business in Canada?
Okay, let me take that back to maybe banking. So often the assumption is that when you say you're going into the bank, your business is separate from your personal. So your personal banking and, you know, business banking, two separate things. Yes, two separate accounts. However, when it comes to lending, I would say this is about like general for almost all of the banks. Any lending that you do under 100,000 is often based on your personal. So if your personal credit is not doing so well, because again, oftentimes when you're starting out, you are using your personal line of credit, your personal credit card, your any lending on the personal side, to be able to start and, you know, run your business. So a lot of times, this is actually not even just newcomers, but just Canadians in general, have the assumption that personal is personal. And then you go for the business, you're like starting with a clean slate. And that's not often the case. Unless your business is generating, you know, revenue and it's self-sustaining, then yeah, like you, and you would have to, have run that business for probably about 2 years in order to see what, like how well the business is doing. But if it's new and a startup, also just very hard to get lending on it, you know, because it's brand new. And if you haven't, it's, you know, the term like skin in the game, like if you haven't invested in it, why would anybody else invest in it? Like, why would your friends, let alone a financial institution? But yeah, like, but that, the lending side of things is very important for people to know, because yeah.
That is,
I don't know if I feel like I've crushed so many people's, I don't know, like, but that's the reality. Sorry.
I mean, I do think that lending in Canada is really, really poor.
Yeah.
I do think so. Like, I mean, I stand to be corrected, but I think that.
What do you mean by that, actually?
Yeah, like for small businesses, like I hear you, it kind of makes sense that we should have below 100K, that it should be tied to your personal credit score, for example. That sort of makes sense to me. However, yeah, I struggle with there's just not enough programs for small businesses. And people will say grants, but I hate grants. I'm sorry. I mean, I'll probably apply for some for the newcomers and stuff, but I don't believe in grants. I think that grants are great to have, but what you want more is a bit more, we need more better forms of capital. Because I think that grants in themselves, if you have too much of it, it incentivizes certain kinds of behaviors. Because when you take a grant, sometimes I don't have to pay it back, so I just get a grant and use it for X, you know, a loan, a tax credit, and all that. Those kind of things are driven towards, because they have hard goals. Like if you get a loan, you need to pay it back, so you need to tie it to something. But we don't have enough of that. We have enough of the other side. So that's why I said I feel like lending in Canada, for me, it feels really very parse and poor.
I hear.
And we need to build businesses, and that there's just not enough of that. Like, why should it be easier for me to get a grant than to get a loan for the business? Or can't we have more patient capital? Like, I don't know. It's probably a much broader conversation than this conversation. But it's just something that I really would love us to I wish the country did more with that, honestly.
I mean, I would love to know where you're getting your grants from, because for startups,
I'm not getting anyone.
Right? Like, it's really hard to come across, money to start your business, to be quite honest. So therefore, that's where it is so important for entrepreneurs or anybody that's thinking about entrepreneurship to really think twice about what it is that they're wanting to do. Like, I think sometimes we fantasize entrepreneurship as, you know, oh, I'm my own boss and I run my own hours and things. And it's like, yeah, you're working 24 hours. Like, you just went from a 9 to 5 to working 24 hours, because if you are not able to fund the business is not going to fund itself, at least until it's established. And that could be, sometimes people are in the startup stage for a few years. Sometimes maybe it's, 6 months or whatever, like, right. Like, it really is dependent on what you're doing and the really, like, the need that you are, or the gaps that you're filling. So if you've kind of figured that out, if you've done the research and you kind of see this gap and you're able to fill it, then great. But other times it does take a while for people to notice what your business is and what you're offering. And often let me take banker hat off and strategist hat on, and it's the lending side of things. Is, unless you know your business is going to be able to repay, I do not think there's any need for you to go and get lending. And the reason is, it just adds additional stress. So unless if you have one person or, at least a few clients that say, yes, I'm willing to pay a dollar for this service or product that you're providing, then you really are putting yourself in a worse position than making sure that your product is actually good enough or service is good enough to be able to get a client. And I think often people kind of, fall in that trap of they've got this, massive loan, or even if it's small, it's not free, it's not cheap. You're having to pay for it. But if your business is not, if you haven't done all of the work that you needed to do, like on the kind of that foundational work, then it makes it a bit more challenging. So, it's a give or take in every situation, but it's always important to be cautious of that.
So, which kind of makes sense for the grant itself, even though we don't seem to have enough grants most grants are not for profit, to be honest. Like,
for sure. Yeah. I think that's the, and then, there are, I don't know if they, I would consider them grants, but there are requests for proposals, for example, that you submit to usually government of Alberta will have them, or the federal government. So if you're a business owner, or if you're a service provider, then you kind of submit these requests for proposals, and pretty much it's an opportunity to bid on a contract. So construction, usually that's kind of how they do it. And sometimes, not sometimes, but often, even for, you know, it's like pens and swag items and things like that with company logo. If that's something that you provide, you can bid, and if you get it, you know, you get it. But it's not really a grant, but it's, you know, it's a contract that you get to win, and it's a way for you to generate business.
Putting your backer's hat back on.
Okay.
Aren't there things that banks can do to help, you know, to help get this kind of environment going for businesses? Either through, I mean, and I'm totally ignorant here, but can't the banks help to improve the funding side of things for startups with more patient capital, for example? Because I think this big struggle is just, like you rightly called out, there's patient capital and there's lending. Lending is not patient capital. It has a fixed timeline that you have to kind of sort out within a couple of months or years, depending on what you sign up for. So we're just curious, like, if you put your banker's hat back on, isn't there something the banks can do to help, or it always has to be done by the investor class or some other class of supporters?
Yeah. So, I mean, there are different ways of getting financing or funding as well. So, I mean, as far as, say, like ATB specifically, like we don't do like VC financing. So venture capital, for example, right? There might be some other financial institutions that would be interested in that. Most of the times, I think, like, again, in the tech space, those are more popular. And there is, the reason is, it's, you know, you're giving away a little bit of equity in order to get some capital to fuel your business. So we are cash flow lenders, right? And most banks are cash flow lenders. So the VC arm is not really what we do. And again, but then I say that also, it depends, right? Like, I think if you have a business that is generating millions of dollars, and there's always, you know, exceptions that could be made down the line, and within different teams and different departments of the financial institution, and certain things could be put into place. So I think that's something to just be aware of. Like, we are, generally speaking, cash flow lending is mostly what the banks do, and this is less riskier. That's really what it comes down to. Now, the other thing too is something to be, I'm pretty sure you have to be a citizen or a PR, but Futurepreneur, for example, if you are under the age of 39 or under, they do have financing available. It is in a loan format. However, it is to be able to support young entrepreneurs to be able to run their business. So I think if they're running it full-time, it's up to 75K. Running it part-time, it's up to 25. I have a feeling that you may have dabbled in that already.
No, like, so two comments. First comment is that, is to the point you make about the millions of dollars. Like, I mean, like, I hear you on that. And I said earlier on, I'll preface this with, this is probably a much broader conversation across just the way banking is done and all that. Because let's use Canada, for example. Majority of the businesses in Canada are small businesses.
Yeah.
Majority of our employers in Canada are small businesses. And so I even just think that from a funding, lending, whatever we call it, liquidity point of view, the millions of, not many businesses are doing millions of dollars, but we need to grow the economy. So if all we're focusing on is the million of dollar businesses, then all we just have is, we just create a huge gap in inequality, because That's just one thing. And that's not a conversation for today. The entrepreneur one is the one I always, I love them. I mean, I'm interviewing more in a couple of weeks or so. Amazing. But I always tell him, I've said this to him, so I'll say to you, I always say to them that I really don't understand the idea behind having a business model that is designed to only fund people below 39. Mm. I don't understand it. I hear you on that. I hear that those people need support. But if you look across the world, the data says that most businesses are created for people above 40. And so, like, we should have something, like, maybe in a futurepreneur, but, like, we should have a program that funds people who are above 40. And I'm saying that because I'm above 40. So.
No worries. No, I mean, it's something that I think is I'm sure a futurepreneur hears it all the time. But however, I think it's because it is set, it is funded by BDC, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So those are the rules that are in place. So it's unfortunate that the over 39s have to work a little bit harder in order to get
I just turned 40 and they're like, hey, yo, I'm like, I can't play anymore because I just turned 40. Like, I'm like, why are you doing that?
No, I'm certain that there's a lot of work that needs to be done on the lending side and things. And to be honest, banking for the most part is very archaic, and the way that we do things is it could use some sort of an update, or it needs to evolve. However, we do kind of have to work within the parameters that that we are in. But you know, I think from my experience and from what I and conversations that I've just had with entrepreneurs, I'm an entrepreneur myself, right? Like I run a business as well, and often it is, you know, you can, there's different options. Like, so you can franchise, for example, so it's already a business that's existing, and you can kind of take over, or you can take over existing businesses. I think that's very popular at the moment. And people looking at, if there are business owners, kind of small business owners that you spoke to around, you know, them retiring and, you know, as an entrepreneur, that might be an option where you take over those businesses. So I think those options are there. Is it easy? No. Like, I think it's capital is always going to be the issue. Yes. I think, even in the VC world, I think 2% of women get access to, this data I think has been around for a little while, but it's about 2% of women that get funded through VC, right? Like, and that's capital outside of, you know, banking. And if you kind of break that down, and it's like, you know, probably women of color is probably 0.00 something, right? So capital is always going to be an issue, and it's going to be a challenge to come across. But my advice is always, you know, have a way for your 9-to-5 to be able to fund your business. Is it going to be enough? Probably not. But it is a way to get your idea at least off the ground. Like, it gives you that cushion to be able to test something out. And you know, if again, Calgary is very much, I would say maybe Alberta is very much interested in the tech space. So for example, Alberta Innovates has a, it's called I believe it's a micro voucher program where you get $10,000 it's a grant, $10,000 for an MVP, but you have to be tech enabled. Right. So if you are in those type of industries, or your business is taking on a specific, or if you have something very special, then looking at some of the programs that are available would be really beneficial. And then the other one would be like crowdfunding as well. Right. So you don't always have to depend on financial institutions or VCs. Maybe it's the community that you've built. So maybe working on building a community around the service or product that you're working on, so that way the crowd can fund it for you. And Kickstarter is usually the most popular one that you can kind of put your idea out there, mm-hmm. and then people from all over the world to fund your business as well. Pitch competitions are, you know, always fun as well, right? Sometimes there's dollar values associated with that.
Yeah.
And often you don't need, you know, I think, this is based on experience, that people don't need a whole lot to get started and get off their businesses off the ground. But there is this misconception that they do, that they need to have so much in capital in order to get started. And that's not always true either. So it really depends on what type of work you're working on. If the equipment is like, you know, something that's needed, could you do something with something smaller and then scale up from there based on the revenue that you're generating or the profits that you're getting from your business, right? That's just, it requires a bit of patience, but it can be done.
That was your biker hat.
Just saying.
So I have like three more questions for you. And I think the first one for me is, if you were talking to someone who just landed in Canada today and say he wants to start a business, like what are the top three things you tell them to do from the get-go?
Yeah. Okay. So I would repeat, work in the industry that you want to start a business in. Yeah. If it's restaurant, go for work for the restaurant. You know what I mean? Like, again, just do your research because it'll just be beneficial for you down the line. Second thing is build a network. I think it's very important to have relationships and a really strong network. And that could be with your community. But I would highly recommend going outside of your community because people are so knowledgeable and they're going to share knowledge that you do not have. And so be open to that. Because that will just help you down the line as well. And that also includes like joining, you know, various networking groups. And then the third thing would be, what is the third thing? Self-confidence. Have faith in yourself. You will succeed if you focus and are staying focused on what it is that you want to do. That's always been my motto, is if you focus on what it is that you're trying to accomplish and if you're clear on it, because that's, I think that comes from just within being clear on the direction that you want to take and the vision that you want to be able to accomplish, you will succeed. But you can't be doing one of these, you know, roller coaster rides. You have to stay grounded in what it is that that you do.
Yeah. What's the one myth about immigrant entrepreneurs you like to debunk?
That, again, I don't know if this is a myth, but there's some noise around them immigrants wanting to come here to like not work and rely on, you know, social assistance and things like that. Yeah, no, it's, I think if you're, you know, my family's an immigrant, I'm an immigrant myself, and I don't think my parents came to this country probably around my age now, and I don't think I would have done what they went through, or I could have gone through what they went through at this age right now. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like the resilience and the ability to come to a country where, you know, they weren't familiar with the language, no family relations, no nothing. And it wasn't by choice that they left the country, right? Like this is for some, it's different. But my family left for different reasons. And so for them to be able to adjust and to be just grateful for being here is something beautiful and something amazing. So yeah, and that, I think they're just in general, I would say that they're the most hardworking individuals that this country will ever have.
I love that. I think the last question is, remember I told you about the book?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay.
So between 1 and 290, just pick one number.
5.
Oh, okay.
5 is my lucky number, so it better be good.
would you rather watch an Olympics that outlawed performance-enhancing drugs or one that embraced them and let athletes use medical pit crews to jack up their performances?
The first option. No. No drugs. That's cheating. That is cheating. Oh yeah. No drugs. Yeah, because then their performance is not going to be true. Like, it's going to be enhanced. So, no drugs.
Thank you so much, Buntu. Like, thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for having me as well. And hopefully your audience will enjoy the conversation.
Oh, I think they will. I mean, because I think you've given a ton of really good insights here, especially that point of our self-belief. Like, it feels like it's not a thing, but it's a thing. Like, in the end, really, is believing yourself. Because, I mean, like I said to everyone, you packed your life into two suitcases and came here. So why? Like, what's the worst that could happen?
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you don't believe in you, nobody else will. So,
yeah.
Awesome.
That's a bunch.
You're very welcome. Thank you.